for a long time. Before Binstock was Hirschberg.
Oh, before Binstock.
Yeah.
Hmm. There was a Rabbi Hirschberg in Milwaukee, too, at the big Reformed congregation.
That's it. Maybe it's Milwaukee, then. It could be his brother.
Mm. I think this was Samuel Hirschberg. We're talking the early 20th century.
Yes, that's right.
Start. This is Andy Mushin on April 28, 2009. I'm at the Mecklenburger home in Highland Park, Illinois, with Lois Mecklenburger, Alan Mecklenburger, and Robert Seidman. Now, Lois, you are the granddaughter of Rabbi Bernard Ehrenreich.
Otherwise known as Docky.
Otherwise known as Docky, right.
And I used to be Missy.
Missy?
When I was teaching.
Uh-huh. Miss E. Oh, sure.
And my grandmother was Mrs. E.
Mm-hmm. So, and your grandfather is most relevant for our purposes because he founded and ran a summer camp near Minocqua.
Right.
Called Cahuaga. Is that how you mm-hmm. pronounce it? Okay. And he also led services, which you remember, for High Holy Days in Wausau, Wisconsin.
Right. And I used to drive him down there, but he had services at camp, too, every Sunday.
Every Sunday? And, uh-huh. Jewish services?
Uh-huh. Okay. I'll show you the book. And his pulpit was a stump. And I remember, I used to giggle because he would pound on the stump to make a point.
Boy, are there any pictures of him at the stump?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And his Indian headdress.
In his Indian headdress. Yeah, I've seen a bunch of photos now of these of counselors and of your grandfather.
He was founded from Lac de Flambeau on Indian basics. And the Indians used to come and teach the boys all how to make totem poles. And
actual Native Americans who lived.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your grandfather made friends with these
Indians?
Mm-hmm.
He made friends. And every Sunday night they had Indian powwows. And today they're using the same words I hear when we're up there that when Doc E started it.
Hmm.
You know, in like 1916 they were doing that then.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about how it started. And your husband was telling me the story. In a sense, it started around a campfire in Maine. I mean, in that there was a conversation about catching...
It was Kennebunkport.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We just, near where the Bushes lived. Mm-hmm. But they went every summer, because the rabbis didn't work in the summer, to a place called Forest Hills House. And I guess after dinner, some man approached my grandfather. They were all sitting around talking. And the man came up to my grandfather and said, "Do you consider yourself a fisherman, because you're out fishing every day?" He said, "Yeah, I am a fisherman." They were deep sea fishing every day with his family. And he said, "Why do you ask?" He said, "Well, have you ever caught a muskellunge?" My grandfather said, "What's a muskellunge? And where do you get them?" And the man described, he said, Minocqua, Wisconsin.
Hmm.
So the next summer, they didn't fly because there were no planes. They must have driven up to Minocqua and fell in love with it. And they found some property on Sunday Lake. And then they went further and they put some money down on it. And then they went over to where they are now, a great big peninsula where the camp is, where you could see, you know, the peninsula. And he liked that much better.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he got his money back and started Cahuaga. And my grandmother stayed up there and helped supervise building the mess hall. My grandfather came back to the pulpit in Montgomery, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And then they opened in 1916.
Wow. So what year was it? 1915 then that he bought the
mm-hmm.
land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the intention of creating
a boys' camp. He had looked in Maine for boys' camp. I mean, for a camp to buy, and I guess they were too expensive there.
Because
he was from New York. Mm-hmm. But he sure fell in love with Minocqua.
Did he ever catch a muskellunge then?
Yes, he did.
Okay, all right, good. So there's a happy ending
yeah,
there, too.
Yeah, he was a fisherman.
I'll add that the camp that he, the site that he found was on Lake Cahuagasauga near Minocqua. So they named the camp a shorter version of the name of the mm-hmm. lake as it's there today.
I see. So he had a pulpit. How long was he in Montgomery then? What do you know about? He had been there for a while, and then
he had been there for a while. But mm-hmm. after camp start, I think he only stayed like 6 or 7 years
mm-hmm.
at the pulpit, and then he had to run the camp.
Prior to that, he'd had a congregation in Philadelphia, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, why did he want to start a camp? It seems
like?
Well, he worked on the New York playgrounds. His family came from Austria or Hungary, right around on the border.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked his way through college, getting paid. He loved children. He was getting paid for working on the playgrounds in New York City. And he visited, like, there's a picture of him at Trip Lake, I think,
yes,
in Maine. And it was just perfect, because I think other rabbis had opened up boys' camps, too, you know, when they had the summers off, or girls' camps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This would be up in Maine at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's where he started looking.
Right. So he thought he would like to do this, too. And rabbis, you were saying, in general, Reform rabbis needed something else to do in the summer,
right,
because Judaism took the summer off, too.
Maybe they were more conservative. Weren't there some more conservative camps up there, too?
Could be.
Eagle River, one started with an M. Yeah,
mm.
I think there were.
Okay.
But this was the first, and it's the one, it's the longest mm-hmm. standing boys camp, and I think in Wisconsin.
Wow.
At least up north it was.
Now, Bob describes the camp as a Jewish camp, and that's interesting because it's not technically, is it a Jewish camp, and there's not a Jewish name, but would you agree that it is or it was a Jewish camp?
Oh, definitely. It still is. And the counselors weren't all Jewish,
mm-hmm.
but it was definitely Reform Judaism.
Mm-hmm. And what was, so?
And this is the important thing, G-O-D, the Great Outdoors. Mm. That's what my grandfather stressed so much.
G-O-D, the Great Outdoors.
He loved the outdoors, and yeah.
Hmm.
But he solicited campers from Jewish families. That's what made it a Jewish camp.
I see. And then you said he led services, too,
mm-hmm.
from the stump every Sunday morning. And was it a Jewish service? Or?
Mm-hmm. I'll show it to you.
Oh, okay.
It was an abridged version of the Union prayer book,
mm-hmm.
the Reformed prayer book, just a shorter version of that, that we did all the prayers that are in the Union prayer book.
Hmm.
So it was a regular kind of a brief Sabbath service,
mm-hmm.
but it was held on a Sunday morning. The non-Jewish counselors all participated in it too. So it was a Jewish service, but yet everyone shared in that. The entire camp did.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you saying that your grandfather wore an Indian headdress when he led services?
No.
Okay, good.
Well, that was Sunday night.
Oh, Sunday night.
That's when
the Indian
powwows were, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what was his interest in Indians?
Lac de Flambeau.
he met Indians up
uh-huh,
there and became
uh-huh.
interested, and that was a big theme of the camp then, wasn't it?
All the camps.
It's still going.
Oh, all the camps.
Oh, it was all the camps? I didn't know that.
They all had Indian names or tribe. The kids were divided into tribes. There
mm-hmm.
was some vestige of Indian culture that went into all the Northwoods camps because Native Americans had been very much a part of the Northwoods life. The reservation is up there. We had when I was there, a counselor came to teach Indian dancing, who was Native mm-hmm. American himself,
mm-hmm.
and I think that was the case earlier too in Doc E's time. So yeah. Indian life has always been a part of northern Wisconsin
sure.
life, and all the camps took something from that. So.
They would have somebody from the reservation.
Oh, so the reservations existed
oh, yeah.
in those days.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
All right. The Flambeau
I remember
reservation.
It so well.
Hmm. You remember being on the reservation?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So did Doc E... Oh, I should ask you first. Bob, tell me again what years you were at camp.
1955 to 1964.
And you began as a camper and completed your years there as a counselor?
Right.
Okay. So obviously it had a huge impact on your life. You
I
went
did.
Back.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
Were you in Chip Lodge the first year?
No, I was a little too old for that.
Oh.
Just beyond that. But I started as the second of the two tribes. The camp was divided into four tribes, Chippewa, Sioux, Mohawk, and Oneida. So I started off as a Sioux, which was the second youngest, and I finished up as an Oneida.
So you work your tribes by age group?
By age group,
ah,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Interesting. Did Doc E feel a special kinship at all, do you think, with Native Americans?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure he did.
Yeah. Could you explain how? I mean,
well, it was very much a part of the culture of northern Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids were there in the woods doing a lot of nature Nature was very important to the camp too. Everyone had to take a course in nature, trees, identifying trees, wildlife, all of that. Mm-hmm. And that's very much what the Native Americans did as well. So I think that he and other camp directors too felt a connection to the Native American culture that started human settlement there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I think also you should the Native American culture was treated with reverence, almost, you would have to say. It was an honor to be an officer in the hierarchy of the tribal government.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The kids, we elected officers by tribe. Mm-hmm. That's right. There was a chief and a sachem and other different, and those were all honors that the kids would vote on. And the tribes would participate in the Sunday night Indian ceremonies. The different tribes were four tribes, and each one had a chief, and they would participate in some way in the ceremony. So this is all very much a part of the camp program.
Can you describe what they wore? They all wore?
Well, the director wore a very elaborate headdress of feathers, really gorgeous, and authentic Native American garb, and also a vest.
Mm-hmm.
And then the counselors who represented each tribe wore vests too. They were often elaborate beaded, handsome beaded vests. And all the kids wore headbands with feathers when they would go to these ceremonies. Blankets, you often put a blanket around you for a t-shirt or a shirt, and then you'd come in putting a blanket around you as well.
Hudson Bay, my grandfather here.
Yes. the camp director, Lois's father, had the most elaborate, really gorgeous eagle feather headdress that he would wear to these ceremonies. It was very striking and very beautiful.
Hmm. What was your father's name?
Lois, L-O-U-I-S.
And what years was he then director of the camp?
Well, he was there from the time it opened. He was, I think, 8 years old. He was born in 1904. Something like that.
First
as a camper, yeah. Then a counselor, an assistant director. And my grandfather retired. My father took over in 41.
I see.
Was there until 68.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sold the camp.
Okay, so the camp was in the family 53 years then. It's a long time.
And we're still invited there whenever we want to go, and I go all the time.
Oh, that's neat.
We go all the time.
And,
we have grandchildren going there.
Your grandchildren go to this camp.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So,
and then I wanted to explain one other thing.
Please.
There's a girls' camp in Minocqua called Camp Agawock, which is Cahuaga spelled backwards.
Yeah.
And my grandfather helped my grandmother's sister, who was his sister-in-law, and a partner, Daisy Pinkhurst, start Agawock.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there about the first 5 years.
It continues in operation.
That's wonderful.
Too.
They're both going strong today.
What was the sister-in-law's name?
Helene Bach.
Helene Bach. And where did she live?
New York. Central Park.
Well, and she came out and ran the camp.
Mm-hmm. And both the camps, both the directors they had boys from all over the country, a couple from California, but mostly down south and all over Ohio, Michigan. What was nice about it, excuse me, the boys knew people from all over.
Mm-hmm. You were saying that the campers were Jewish, I mean...
Yes.
How did Doc E. Go about getting his campers in the beginning? I mean, were they families he knew, or?
Yeah, he started with a lot of families from the South.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Montgomery and Birmingham and all the towns down there. He was a rabbi, and he went to the different towns, for services. And so he selected families from there, but some from Chicago, too, the first year.
Mm-hmm. And was there any point that he started advertising, sending out brochures? And I'm curious if he did so, in Jewish media.
I have one of the brochures. I don't know where he distributed, though.
Okay.
I'll show you.
But he always targeted Jewish boys because he wanted an experience for Jewish kids. Okay.
It's like the hospital. They lived there, and then they made a hospital out of it.
So when the mic's back on, so your grandparents lived in a little homestead, a little like light, one or on two water. Room house along the water uh-huh. that was there when Aerial, they bought the camp.
Two-story,
okay.
And then there was another, they lived there for a few years and the boys lived in tents.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years later, maybe about 3 years later, there was a house here and it was too noisy for the people that owned the house. And that house was called Bideaway. B-I-D-E-W-E-E-E. It means rest a while.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold to my grandfather. So my grandparents moved to that house. That became the hospital. And then over here, they had bought another homestead, log homesteads. And the caretaker lived over there.
Hmm. How big a camp was it in those earlier days? Any idea?
Yeah, it says in the...
Oh, all right. Then I'll find it.
Maybe about 25 boys.
Mm-hmm.
That was the beginning.
How far from Minocqua was it?
Well, if you went by the railroad, there's a railroad line that goes through there. It's now a bicycle path. But it was only 2 miles that way. It was about five. That's the way everybody went.
It would be as the crow flies.
As the crow flies. And there was a trestle that you had to walk across. That was fun. Then you were in town. The other way, it was probably about 5 miles.
Mm-hmm. So how did the kids get to camp originally? I mean, they would take the train and then...
The Hiawatha.
And then they'd have to hike into camp, or how close?
Yeah,
the camp had its own train station, which is where this sign is that now is erected to commemorate that.
Mm-hmm.
It had its own station called Cahuaga that was on the timetables. So the kids bought their tickets from Chicago to Cahuaga, it said. They had their own station, and it would pull up to Cahuaga Station, and the train would stop, and the kids got out, and we did this when I started. And we'd all walk in as a group into the camp, which is about a 10-minute walk from from the tracks into the camp. That's how each season began, with a kind of mass walk of everybody kind of strolling into the camp from just this short distance away in the Milwaukee Road.
But didn't you tell me that the counselors kind of took care of the boys?
Yes. Now, when I came in my first year, that the boys would be homesick, so their older brothers would race them in to keep them from getting homesick, anything to distract them. That's how it was. You kind of got off, and I remember, where am I? What is this? What? I knew I was going to camp, but I had no idea. I'd never seen it before. It was pretty startling for a little 10-year-old kid to be alone, away from his folks for the first time. And walk into this through the woods. It was really a beautiful walk. It is quite a lovely stroll into the campgrounds, and then you kind of get to see the whole center of it once you get close to it. And we went into the mess hall for a meal for dinner. It was a day train, and everything was noisy, and there was all kinds of Native American artifacts in the dining hall. Lots of old things that Lois's father and grandfather collected. It's a very rustic and very beautiful place today.
Mm-hmm.
That was how we started.
Mm-hmm.
There were two birch bark canoes hanging from the ceiling.
Yes.
But they rotted out. They just got rid of those a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather had like showcases all around the dining room, or maybe just about three sides, of local animals and local birds that were stuffed.
Mm-hmm.
I'll mention something I thought of that we sort of skipped, and it's back a bit. But
that's fine.
Doc Hee started the camp in 1915, and the first summer the boys came up was the next year. And he continued as rabbi in Montgomery until 1921, I think. At that point, he gave up the pulpit, and he moved to Chicago. The camp then became his full-time occupation, and I think that he then worked from Chicago then outward to the other cities from which the camp drew campers.
Well, my father did a lot of that, cross soliciting.
Yes.
He would drive all over the country, you know, to help my grandfather out and interview boys and their parents and show the camp movies.
They often knew one family in a town, and then they would invite other families whose boys were getting to the camping age.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of personal referral. A lot of people came through other families that they knew socially or through the temple or so on.
So did your dad then drive all over the country? Mm-hmm. I mean, recruiting kids.
Recruiting, yeah.
Amazing.
Yes.
Recruiting, soliciting.
Was the largest number of boys, do you think, ever at the camp for a summer?
In your day.
It's about 130.
Mm-hmm.
From Chicago, from Detroit, in my time, it changed. It shifted, but in my years, it was Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Toledo, Milwaukee, smaller numbers from Peoria.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a couple of other places in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
They came from a few from Indiana, occasionally from Indianapolis and smaller cities in Indiana. A few came from Oshkosh.
Hmm.
Other smaller, and we had some from Houston and the southern cities when I was there at first, too. Alabama, mm-hmm. Mississippi, Louisiana, small numbers came.
Amazing.
In addition, Lou, I assume Doc E did the same thing, but Lou resisted the temptation to just fill up locally. He could have filled the camp with boys from Chicago, but he felt that a part of the camping experience was the diversity, meeting boys from other geographic areas. And he set himself quotas. And once he filled his quota in an area, he cut it off. They went on a waiting list. And he was very firm about that.
But in the beginning, it was a lot of Southern boys.
Yeah. Now, did your father operate the camp in the way his father did? I mean, so...
I think exactly, yeah.
So over that 53 years, I mean, it was essentially the same philosophies, the same approaches.
But the amazing part of it is now they're doing the... I mean, the same... It's all on, I just can't get over that. It's all on the same schedule, the same. They've improved it a lot, but they haven't forgotten all the old traditions. That seems to be the important part of camp.
Mm-hmm.
And these traditions from the very beginning.
But Lois's father took the camp and expanded it too. He improved on it when they built new cabins, new facilities, and when things like scuba diving came in. Lois's dad instituted that. So the program was never just totally fixed either. He was always looking to improve the camp, expand the program. They sent out camping trips to new places, overnight trips, some of the old places, but then he would always look into other ones as well. And on, I think on his off season, he would often look to find other places that he could take the kids to for overnight camps that his dad had not gone, had not sent kids to. So the camp was constantly improving.
Quite a cove.
Now, and was this then your grandfather's full-time occupation and then your father's full-time occupation? Mm-hmm. So they made a living running this summer camp in northern Wisconsin. That's incredible. I mean, that it's amazing to think that there's...
Well, now they have over 200 kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different camp. It's,
yeah. Is it the same owners as who bought it in 68?
No, it's gone through a couple of owners since.
Uh-huh.
We've gone 7 directors.
Wow.
Yeah. Starting with my grandfather. But right now, and it's been quite a few years, 4 Cahuaga boys and a family bought it, and they hire a director.
Mm-hmm.
But they're up there quite a bit. They kind of take turns. But that's who owns it now.
So former campers. That's so.
Yes. 4 brothers.
I see. What's their name? Their names?
Fisher.
Fisher's a family name, yeah.
From Cincinnati.
From Cincinnati. Oh, so that, now I understand why many of the traditions continue, because these guys grew up with the old traditions.
Mm-hmm. But the amazing thing, we go up there every year, you know, to see the camp, and there's boys that started when they were young, and they just stay until right before they, when they're out of college even, until they get a full-time job and can't make it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so loyal. It's just, it's wonderful.
It was like that in like Lois's Father's Day, too, though. I know so many who stayed through college who were there when I was there as a kid. So it's always had a lot of, it's a hold on a lot of people for all these generations.
You know.
It's a great example.
Yeah, right there.
Right behind us, the Zolos live right over here. And Peter was a camper and a counselor, and his sons have been campers and counselors, and his oldest son now is the assistant director. He teaches, so he has the summer
job. He teaches at Lake Forest, so he's
so there's, you know,
I'm sorry, what's that name?
The camp is really,
Zolo.
It's gotten a grip on so many different families.
Mm-hmm.
He will end up director someday.
And Peter's mother went to Camp Agawak,
Yeah.
So there's a lot of
connections.
She
was in my cabin.
Mm-hmm. Was there a sense that they were brother-sister camps?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you did?
That's what I forgot. Mm-hmm. Every Sunday, the girls got to hike through the woods, and it was quite a long hike. To co-op, maybe it was 2 miles or more, three. It seemed long. We were little. And we walked. The roads were all sand. The roads going into camp, they were all sand. We would get to Cahuaga, and my grandfather would give his Sunday services. And then everybody could go from Agawak that had a brother at Agawak. And I had, you know, parents there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just the highlight. We got to sit, and they spread us out. You know, we were sitting all over the dining room, and that was a highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the things, they got to see their brothers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll mention, too, that there was a girls' camp across the lake from Cahuaga called Camp Pinemere that was also all Jewish girls.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had socials with Agawak as well as with Camp Pinemere, which dated back almost as far as Agawak. Mrs. Grace Kahn founded Camp Pinemere.
Mildred Jones, too.
Yes, and they drew from many of the same cities that Cahuaga drew from.
Hmm.
That's and where I was went to Grace, camp, too.
Uh-huh. Where was Grace from? Grace?
Where was Mrs. Kahn from?
Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Miss Jones taught at Faulkner.
You know, in the early 20th century, there was this sense that Jews should be, you know, moved out of urban life and get back to the land. And I'm wondering, did your grandfather have any of that philosophy in him, that Jews really belonged out in nature, belonged on the land, and were not a, you know, a shtetl people anymore? Did he ever talk about that?
I think he felt that it would be a helpful thing to get boys away from the city in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. But not all year long.
No, right. Not all year long, but for the mm-hmm. summer, it would be a more wholesome life for them to leave home, to leave the congestion of the city, and to get to a place where there was none of that, and they could live closer to nature and also develop friendships away from home.
Mm-hmm. What values do you think your grandfather and then your father tried to instill in the campers?
You would know more about that. You were out in the cabins with them.
About Cahuaga's ideal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell me about that. If you,
okay.
We'll have
well, you,
to give you a copy.
Mm-hmm.
Let me.
They used a father's prayer for his son, which generally focused on clean living, on a closeness to nature.
Mm-hmm.
On healthy competition. The camp had competition, but it wasn't out of control. It wasn't a sports camp in the sense that kids went there just to develop skills. But they did. And there was mm-hmm. inter-camp competition, very spirited competition with other boys' camps that was the highlight of each summer, two or three of those sometimes during the year.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it had to do with living together close by, developing skills, athletic skills, and outdoor skills. And a bit of
a big scrapbook, too. As he went through that.
And good, healthy relationships with their peers and with the counselors, too, who helped mm-hmm. develop them. I think it all stemmed from Doc E's days with children in New York when he saw playgrounds and urban life, and I think mm-hmm. he wanted to do something to get the kids away from urban life for a period of each year.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he tried to teach Jewish values through this sort of Indian Native American culture that he promulgated there?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
A kind of blend.
You
of
the ideal?
They did believe in the Native American culture because it was such a part of northern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. But we did have the Jewish services, mm-hmm. which were definitely Reform services, and that's what most of the kids were when I was there. Most of them came from Reform families, so these were the same services or similar to the ones that we knew from mm-hmm. home as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was both.
Mm-hmm. How was the food?
Well, boy, the food in Lois's father's time was the best of any camp.
Oh, really?
I'm not just bragging, but it was known for that. It was outstanding food. He was mm-hmm. very particular about these things, and we all enjoyed the best. There were no complaints about the food ever. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And before
chicken and ice cream on Sunday, and then the boys all had to pump their own water. There was a pump outside the mess hall. Pump their own water. I guess it always tasted good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a dipper, and they would serve. You know,
we had fish on Fridays, I think, in a gesture to Catholic counselors.
Mm-hmm.
Steak on Saturdays, and chicken and mashed potatoes on Sunday. Other good meals.
Cream.
The main meal was at 1 in the afternoon.
I see.
That was our dinner. Mm-hmm. And we had a lighter supper so that the kids could do a little bit more after dinner in the evenings as well and not be so packed full.
Sure.
We had a rest hour an hour after after the main meal, so we didn't start up until 3 o'clock. From 1 to 2 was the lunch, was the dinner, and then 2 to 3 was a rest hour. The kids had to stay in their cabins on the bunks and take it easy.
Got it. Now, I can't imagine, there's some great photos here.
Yes.
Now, the food was not kosher, but was there pork or shellfish? I mean, he kind of drew that
no
sort
bacon.
Of line.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Oh, there's a picture of the Cahuaga train station. How did Doc E manage to get his own little railroad station? Did he know somebody?
We figured he must have, and they were probably bringing enough business to the railroad that they talked the railroad into instituting a stop there.
Mm-hmm. And how far was that stop from the other stops around it?
About 2 miles from Minocqua.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there was a stop for Agawam Rants.
Yes, but Doc E got his own advertising right out of the railroad time because it was called Cahuaga.
That's remarkable. And how long a ride was it from Chicago, for instance, or Milwaukee?
Now, I'll share this, too. We're talking camps, but I thought you'd like to have some of these. There's a camp, Strongheart.
Yes.
That was near Cahuaga. It was on the Northwestern line. It was started by a man named Nathan Herzog from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a stop on the Northwestern called Strongheart.
Yes.
Yes. Between Lake Tomahawk and Woodruff.
Mm-hmm. Now there was a camp, I think Maccabee up there too?
Yes, somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm thinking
that was probably
of...
probably more religious. Though,
I right? think so.
You were saying earlier that there were other rabbis who owned camps, it's Jewish camps in the way Doc E's camp was Jewish, at the same time. Can you tell me who these rabbis were and what the camps were? What do you remember?
I know that Rabbi Abram Hirschberg founded Camp Horseshoe near Minong, which is near you, I think, in Sawyer County or close to near Hayward.
Mm-hmm.
And operated that for many years, I think in a similar fashion to the way Doc E operated Camp Cahuaga.
Mm-hmm.
Camp Horseshoe's been revived. It moved to a different site and was sold, but their traditions are not very different from Camp Cahuaga's. The fellow who runs Camp Horseshoe now used to be the director of Camp Cahuaga, and he took the Horseshoe name and moved it to a new site near Rhinelander where it's operated also as a principally Jewish camp today.
Mm-hmm.
And Rabbi Hirschberg's traditions have now been kind of revived in a new site, but it's a similar kind of feel to Cahuaga.
Mm-hmm. Any other rabbis with camps up there?
Well, the Chukagami, it's a rabbi's wife, Isserman. His name was Ferd, isn't it? Ferd?
Oh, yes.
Isserman? I'm trying to think there are other
rabbis, but I'll mention another camp because there's Camp Nebagamon that's at Lake Nebagamon that is founded by a man who started off as a counselor at Cahuaga.
Oh, interesting.
Right.
So we always...
Max Lorber.
Yes, Max Lorber, who owned it and whose family ran it for very many decades the way the Ehrenreichs ran Cahuaga.
But they had a lot of Cahuaga traditions because they all went
that's
there.
That's where I went.
Oh, you went to camp up there. I see. And it was a Jewish camp in the same way then that Cahuaga was, that there were services and Jewish kids.
Mm-hmm.
That is so interesting. How did...
with Gentile counselors.
With Gentile counselors.
Some.
And Indian, very much reverence for the Indian way of life.
Now, where did you grow up? I'm sorry.
I grew up in Winnetka.
In Winnetka, uh-huh. And how did you hear about this camp at Nebagamon?
My brother before me
had
been a camper there and was a counselor my first year that I went to camp.
Oh, I see. And how many years did you go up there to
Nebagamon? I only went for 3 years. I had become very much interested in Boy Scouting and wanted to go to the Boy Scout camp in order to earn merit badges and move up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But when you hear stories about Cahuaga, it sounds like it could be stories about Nebagamon. Is that how you pronounce it?
Nebagamon. Yeah. Oh, very similar. Because Muggs Lorber, who ran Nebagamon, knew the, came, the came whole out of Cahuaga, Cahuaga system.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting.
He ran his on a logging camp hierarchy as opposed to an Indian tribal thing.
It was on the Weyerhaeuser estate, I think, that mm-hmm. Camp Nabagaman right. was located. So
right.
it had that tradition.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Here's I'm holding an older black and white photo of Doc E. Gramps, as it says on the back. When do you think this was from?
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Probably about the 40s.
Mm-hmm. And then you're showing me also a brochure.
Mm-hmm.
It's
probably from the 20s.
Yeah, Camp Cahuaga on one side and Camp mm-hmm. Agawak on the other.
Mm-hmm.
From the 20s, you think?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, it's in lovely shape. And, well, I'll have to get a copy of this. That's amazing.
Okay,
it's great you
that.
Have
I've
that.
That. You can copy that, I bet, on the...
Hmm?
Yeah, just on a copy
on
machine.
On a computer?
But, oh, on a scanner? Yeah, on a scanner.
Hmm? I can copy that, sure.
Oh, that'd be great.
Both sides?
Remarkable. That's
Did you make an
age.
Extra copy, Al?
Honey?
One for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very neat. So, after 21, yeah, that he left Congregation Call, it says, in Call Montgomery in Montgomery, mm-hmm. Alabama, and then lived full time in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and then Hyde Park,
right across the street from where we lived.
Mm-hmm. Did he do any rabbinic work during
yes.
the non-summer months?
Yeah, he did when they needed him, but during the war is when he really did it. He would take over pulpits for people that were gone in service.
Is this...
And he had one in Stockton, California. And then one.
Is this World War I or
Baton
two?
Rouge?
One or two, I'm sorry. Which wars?
Two.
Okay.
Do you know what? He was involved in World War I, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he was.
Okay, we're back up here. So, Doc E., he lived in Chicago, and during World War Two had a couple of pulpits replacing rabbis
mm-hmm.
who were serving in the
right.
war, and some. And then, tell me about what you remember about Doc E. leading services at the synagogue in Wausau. Now, there's some record that he was there in the 1920s and
mm-hmm.
1930s. I met somebody, as I said, in Elkhorn, who remembered him from those years. Now, you said you drove him to do these services?
From camp, yeah.
Uh-huh. When would that have been?
Well, it must have been about when I was in, probably about 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
I was just getting my driver's license, and they thought that was good practice for me. So I would drive him from Minocqua to, what is it, about an hour and a half to Wausau.
Mm-hmm. What year would this have been?
Probably just in the 40s, I don't know how.
So as late as the 40s
yeah,
he was
doing
this?
Yeah, 29, yeah.
Okay, so, and these were high holiday services primarily that he led?
No.
Oh.
No, the ones I went to, I probably wasn't up there. I was in school by the time the high holidays
sure.
came. It was just the Friday night service. They weren't even night. They were the Sunday services, I guess.
In
Wausau.
That was
reform, yeah.
Uh-huh. Do you remember... where you went, was there a synagogue building you took
uh-huh,
them to?
Right.
Okay, what do you remember?
I don't know the name of it.
Okay.
It just, to me, it was a temple.
Mm-hmm. And any idea what...
Can you turn that off 1 minute?
So did you then attend the services that your grandfather
led? Oh, sure.
Read, and,
sure.
Were they similar to the services he led at camp, do you know? Or
no,
not
at all.
It was a longer
they
service.
Were longer service out of the prayer book and...
Mm-hmm. Now, Doc E. was a scholarly man, so do you remember the sermons he delivered at all?
No, I don't.
Mm, okay.
I don't remember them.
Maybe you didn't.
What I do remember, he used to get up at 4 o'clock every morning when he was running the camp and read. He had book. He liked Greek, and he had read books in Greek
wow.
to keep his mind going. And
mm-hmm.
he was amazing.
So before a whole day.
And then
day
he'd go visit the Holzmans, and then by then it was, you know, time for the boys to get up.
So he'd visit the Holzmans?
Yeah, he'd go in town. That was the only Jewish family in town. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Maury Holzman, right?
Joe Holzman.
Oh.
His brother, Joe.
Maury was in Eagle River, and his brother was in Minocqua. His brother had the Minocqua Fruit Company.
Mm-hmm.
And Docky would visit him.
In the morning, yeah.
Just to...
probably have a cup of coffee. He had a very thick... Joe Holzman. I could never understand. A very thick Russian accent.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had to be lonely there in that town of Minocqua with...
Yeah. So your grandfather went in. They were friends, and they would just chat.
Yeah, friends,
in the morning.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Now, did any of the area Jews ever come to the camp? I mean, just to visit or look around, or do you know?
A lot of people came to visit, but I don't remember very many Jewish families.
I see.
There really weren't any in Minocqua.
No.
Just the Wolpes.
Yes.
And the Wolpes bought the Heinemann's house.
Mm.
In Minocqua. And now it's interesting because the Heinemann house that now belongs to Jerry Wolpe, and Jerry Wolpe is the token Jew in Minocqua. And he goes from church to church explaining about Judaism. It's really amazing. Jerry Wolpe.
How do you spell his last name?
W-O-O-L-P-Y. He was from the south side of Chicago. And he bought his sisters out of the house. And he loves it up there, and he loves going to Wausau to give sermons. But his big joy is explaining Judaism to.
Is he there full time in Minocqua?
Mm-hmm. He used to be a professor in a school around here someplace in Indiana, I think.
I'll mention another Jewish family that was up there before my time, and his name was Sidney Florsheim. He was from Chicago.
Hmm.
He was very wealthy, and he created an experimental farm outside of Minocqua where they raised cattle, certain breed of cattle. And the farm is still, the barns are still there, and his house is still there. It was around 1915 or so, around the time that Cahuaga was founded. He built this estate, really, called Rockwood. And it's...
Is that on the road to... Lac de Flambeau?
On 70. It's off of 70.
It says Florsheim.
It's Florsheim Road.
Florsheim
and that
Road.
Is that was his property.
Huh.
The barns are very handsome. And it was bought by Arthur Rubloff, who was a very prominent real estate executive in Chicago, who had made his summer home up there on that property.
He lived across the street from us in High Purple of it.
Did he? And when the Lakeland mm-hmm. Hospital needed money to get started, it was Arthur Rubloff who really made the hospital that's now Howard Young Medical Center happen.
Interesting. Now, what was Florsheim was experimenting with cattle?
Yes.
Is that the man in the shoe business or another?
No, another branch of the same family.
Oh, okay.
I think they were in the corset business at that time, and he was interested in this. There's a farm in Charlevoix, Michigan that Lois and I have both visited. It was also an experimental farm. They raised, I think, dairy cattle there.
They still do?
Still do. Mm-hmm. And this was along the same lines as that, a smaller version of the same thing.
So Florsheim had dairy cattle?
I'm not sure if they were dairy or beef cattle, but they were cattle.
How long did he do that, do you think?
I think about 20 years.
And did he... do you know, was he successful in any of his work?
I don't know.
Okay. I suppose if the cattle don't die on you, you're successful,
yes.
Right?
Right. But, well, he had these barns, and I don't know. He had quite an elaborate setup.
God, that's fascinating. Thank you.
It's a digression, but
no, it's a useful
road.
One.
It's Minocqua history. Too.
Yeah, it's important.
You go by the road all the time, because I think I've 1,000 times I've driven between Minocqua and Hayward. I never knew what Florsheim was.
So Doc E was up there. There were other Jews who owned camps. There were a few Jews who lived in the communities. Do you remember ever any anti-Semitism up there? Or let me put it in a more general way, how did the locals treat the Jews who lived in and worked in their midst?
There was no problem until I read that Milwaukee paper about all the Semitism in Minocqua.
about anti-Semitism in Minocqua. And when would that have been, do you think?
When I was in college, and I was in college 46 to 50, Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew all the people that they were, you know, talking about.
And they were talking about them as what, members of an organization, or?
No, they interviewed people all over town that have resorts and, you know, things like that. And there were no Jews allowed, but they kept it quiet.
Mm.
Get down. Excuse me.
That's all right. So no Jews allowed. And in the, I'll try to find this newspaper article, but did these people speak in anti-Semitic ways in the article, or the article was just about?
No, it was about resorts. Pointing out they had done a survey.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably all over Wisconsin. They had done a survey in Minocqua.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just amazed.
There,
all the anti-Semitism.
I have an ad from a resort up there that was in the Glencoe News here that said restricted clientele.
Hmm.
So there were a lot of places that were pretty open about not accepting Jews.
There was a Wisconsin official government tourism magazine from the 1930s that ran ads for resorts that said Gentiles only. I mean, it was...
Uh-huh.
That was Minocqua.
Yeah, it was Minocqua.
The area, a lot, mm-hmm. to a great degree.
But if you knew we're in town, I mean, my parents knew, my grandparents knew all the people, and my parents did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any problem until, you know, it was all kept under...
Mm-hmm. So, in a sense, the Jews could socialize with the Gentiles of town. They just couldn't go to the resorts. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
The camps brought a lot of business to Minocqua. The parents came up and stayed there for sometimes extended periods after they visited the mm-hmm. kids.
Oh, it's my daughter calling.
You want to stop, Lois?
Yeah, I think I better. Something home and, you know, mail it back?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to.
Do you have any more time, Lois?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, you've been extremely helpful, and can I call you if I have more questions?
Okay. Well, I just thought while you and Bob were here, I could just, you know, you could look at some of these early Cahuaga.
Yeah.
Just kind of get a feeling for it. This is what I wanted to show both of you. That pine needle, Mugs Lorber's in there.
Oh, my.
The Daily Pine Needle. So, 19...
Yeah, look at that.
1923.
Oh, my.
So these were like the newsletters? Or
mm-hmm.
I have them, too.
Do you?
I have the weekly pine needle for several years. They would be four pages. The kids would put in their letters to their parents that show the activities of the previous week.
All right.
I've got a bunch of them at home. If you'd like, I'd make copies and you get an idea of what it was like.
Well, here, for instance, near the back of this booklet, Pine mm-hmm. Needle obtains last statements as counselors prepare to leave. And, yes, here is Max Lorber you were talking mm-hmm. about, and then Dr. Aaron Reich at the bottom. I expect every fellow back next year for the big things then.
So. Oh, another name to put down, because he can't miss, is one Cahuaga fellow was on the cover of Time magazine.
Oh, yeah? Who was that?
And that's Nelson Glick, who was the rabbi the Hebrew Union College, and he was a famous archaeologist. He discovered King Solomon's mines in Israel. He made the cover of Time, and he was a counselor at Cahuaga.
I heard a lot about him.
G-L-U-E-C-K.
Oh, right.
He was famous.
In his time, he was one of the most famous archaeologists in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Bibliographic here. I'll just see that.
So
I'm just going to leave these here for you.
Oh, that's great. I do want to look through them. Mm-hmm.
And then this has what I wanted you to see, too. The Cahuaga Ideal. That's the Sunday program, and this is something. That's what they... kind of ran the camp by, and then mm-hmm. these are some articles from the newspaper. And this is all the heritage. My father wrote this up,
mm-hmm.
the history after his father died.
You see, it's funny, Mike Voss.
Just take home a folder.
I will.
Did you know Mike Voss?
Oh, yeah.
He married the daughter of the director of Camp Pinemere.
Blinky, we used to call him.
Blinky, right. So that there's that connection to that, and Max Lorber started.
Yeah, there's so many connections.
Nabagaman.
Hmm.
Can I give people more coffee? And this is what Bob brought.
No, Lois, go ahead. Don't do it now. We'll just save that for you and Al.
Enjoy
that.
It's all right. I'm not hungry. I ate before I came down.
Now, is this something I should
keep? Yeah, why don't you keep that?
That'd
just
be great.
Because there's mention of
of him, and
yeah, that'd be interesting. I keep everything I can on Cahuaga, but mm-hmm. I have all these books, you know, pictures mm-hmm. from 1916.
So,
to just about the 30s.
Before you leave, just the services in Wausau. Do you remember, for instance, how many people were there? And these were Sunday, kind of mm-hmm, Sabbaths, mm-hmm. you know, so-called Sabbaths.
I wouldn't have been able to drive at night.
Mm-hmm.
Just learning.
Yeah. Do you recall, were there many people there? And
yeah, it was always pretty full, but it was so long ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time ago.
I remember a lot of things, but I don't remember. When I'm in Temple, I never look back.
When I was putting a couple of these things that I sent you,
you gotta try this,
Andy. I looked in the annual books of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, and Daki was listed as rabbi of the Wausau Temple for a number of those years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not consecutive, sort of on and off, but when his name appeared, his affiliation was often given as rabbi of that temple too.
Mm.
Sometimes as not a rabbi of any temple, just on his own when he was operating the camp, other years as rabbi of the temple. So he seemed to have had a long affiliation with them, though not a consistent one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit on and off over the years. So I don't know. You wrote about it in your database that the temple veered between reform and conservative. Mm-hmm. So there may have been changes. I don't know.
I see. Did Doc E or did Lou ever have a home in the area off camp?
After Doc E sold the camp, he had a home in Minocqua that's still standing. Between the camp, actually, and town. And he lived there in the summer months.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't operate the camp, but was very, very much involved in Minocqua.
I see.
Spoke at the 4th of July and spoke at other civic events. Helped build the Masonic Temple in town. He was an active Mason.
It was jamming.
Active in the Elks.
Hmm.
He was very much a part of Minocqua life, a leader in the community, I would say, as a speaker particularly. Mm-hmm.
Remind me what year he sold the camp in
1941.
41, okay.
To his son.
And
he still came over and gave all the sermons.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
He was there
that?
Until his death.
Oh, so he came to the camp every Sunday.
Can I keep this up in the microwave?
That's fine. That's okay.
My older friends who were there just before I was remember him very well. Delivering sermons at the service.
And you never had the opportunity to meet him? No.
Just missed him.
Mm. How old a man was he when he passed away? I guess I can figure that out. He was born in 1876, so.
See, he must have been 79.
Yeah.
1955.
That's just what I am. Mm-hmm. Honey, you did a great job on that. Did it work out okay?
Yeah.
Any more questions? Because Andy's time is short
here. Yeah.
We'll put anything you want in here, and you've
okay.
Got
thank you, and I'll yeah, I'll absolutely get that
and
back.
Make sure
to you.
Eat something, and then don't leave it on the table. Can you put up a gate for the kitchen?
What do you want?
We gotta go.
Okay.
What do you want me to do?
Put up a gate.
Well,
for
thank
the
you,
dog?
Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Oh,
this
we
is
loved
great.
It. And, mm-hmm. and the counselors.
Now when. When Doc E had the house starting in 41, did he build it or buy it?
Did he build his own house on Country Club Road?
No, they bought that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice house.
So he lived then in Hyde Park during mm-hmm. most of the year and in just outside Minocqua, you're saying, mm-hmm. in the summers, and was very involved, as you were saying, Bob, in civic activities in Minocqua.
Yes.
So he kept himself awfully busy then. Mm-hmm.
Until his death.
Mm-hmm.
Active in the camp. I mean, he was there every week, I think, mm-hmm. until he died. Every summer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And now Lou, Lou grew up in the camp then, in a sense, and there probably was never any question that he would take over the camp.
I think so.
But yet he bought the camp.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Bought the camp and operated it himself. He and his wife, Lois's mother, operated it for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and Docky's wife was very much a part of the camp in his years too. The two of them were considered the directors of the camp, both.
And before I turned the tape on, you were saying that it was Mrs. E.
Mrs. E.
Yeah, that's what they called her?
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. Lucky guess. Who really supervised the early construction of the camp that first summer because Doc E. had to go back to his pulpit.
Yeah, she was the only one up there.
So she lived alone on that land and supervised construction? Boy, talk about pioneering. I mean,
there
really
somebody
is.
Somebody there, yeah.
Yes.
But it's amazing. She had two kids in Montgomery in school.
And she was up there. Wow.
Somebody had to be up soon.
She was quite late. She was a college graduate, which was unusual for
Hunter
her time.
College. Mm. Woman suffragette. She was wonderful. She was a good
tell, I'm sorry, tell me her name again, please.
Irma.
Irma.
I-R-M-A.
What was her maiden name?
Bock.
B-O-C-K.
Where was she born?
New York City.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how she met Doc E?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't.
So this educated New York City Jewish woman is supervising construction of a camp, really in the wilderness, mm-hmm. in northern Wisconsin.
This was cut over land. Yeah. It didn't look as beautiful as it does today.
Right.
And logging had just
could
taken it,
have been
it all
cousin
down.
Cousin Stephen.
Could be cousin Stephen.
Possible.
Yeah.
So
she was a cousin
right.
of Stephen Wise, who was a contemporary of Doc E.
No, she was a cousin of Stephen Wise's wife.
Wife, right, Louise. Right.
Louise Wise, and I think that's how they must have met.
Okay. So that's pretty high up in the Reform movement. That's
Cousin Steve, I have a picture of him the other
Cousin
room.
Steve.
He was quite a man.
He was, yes.
But did you mention Doc E was in the American Zionist movement with Steve?
No, no.
Well, you know, I meant to tell you, you were talking about Doc E. helping to found ZBT, the fraternity,
mm-hmm.
in an old, some kind of old American Jewish yearbook. There's a listing of Jewish organizations across the United States, and the ZBT address is Northern Wisconsin, and I was always wondering,
you're kidding.
Why was the address up there, and you've now answered that question. Yeah, so he must have still been... You know, the corresponding president or secretary or something at the time.
Many a cheer in our mess hall was, here's to ZBT, boys, our fraternity. We are her subjects, and she is our queen. Oh, yes, we are the sons of Zeta Beta Tau, boys. Our fraternity, and we'll swear our allegiance to Z.
Chapter Rho ZBT.
Chapter Phi ZBT.
Did you join ZBT?
Yes.
Oh, you did.
Many of the boys from Cuyahoga joined ZBT.
Yeah.
Where did you go to school?
University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got there, I joined ZBT pretty much because of Cuyahoga.
Sure.
Lots of older guys were there, and I liked them very much, and they kept coming after me, too.
What was the Camp Cuyahoga song?
Oh, we had lots of them.
March, march on
down the field, fight for Cuyahoga. Brave through the foeman's line, their strength to defy. So give a cheer for Cuyahoga's men. We're here to win again. Other teams may fight to the end, but we will win.
That's great. Yeah.
What about the Sunny Shores of Cuyahoga Saga?
That's before
important.
My time.
They didn't sing that?
No.
Can you sing it?
On the Sunny Shores of Cuyahoga
sure.
Saga? I can't remember all the words.
Oh,
on the Sunny Shores of Cuyahoga Saga, there's a thing that can't be beat. Something, they're the finest in the land, something a good and mighty band. From Chippewa to Oneida, they're the pride of USA. And then around the campfire, they all sing.
Hmm. Wow. Do you have any athletic memories?
Well, I remember the competitions with other camps.
Mm-hmm.
We played Camp Timberlane, which is near Eagle River.
I thought you wanted to leave it alone.
Camp Menominee, that's near Eagle River.
Mm-hmm.
Camp Nabagaman.
Just wait.
Camp Strongheart.
These are
those are a lot of my memories, is going to those camps, too. And we
this
had socials with girls' camps,
mm-hmm.
on the
Jewish girls' camps. Mm-hmm. Camp Pine Mere,
so
Camp Agawak,
mm-hmm.
Camp Chippewa, Ranch Camp that's near
that.
Eagle River,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
Camp Nokomis that's near Mercer,
Mm-hmm. This is fascinating.
Well, what any relationships, long-lasting relationships developed from those socials?
Yes, occasionally. And, mm-hmm. and in fact, the folks that Lois sold her house to in Highland Park, he married a girl from Agawak, Rosie, and they're still married today, as far as I know, grandparents today.
Mm. Sure. Nice. What
yeah,
were the
boys used to meet, right?
The kids would meet in the middle of the woods. In the dark of the night, they would sneak out from camp to meet the girls at Agawak.
Not the kids, the
counselors,
right?
Would.
How far were the camps apart?
About maybe 2 or 3 miles through the woods. There were fire lines through the woods, and you'd have to know exactly which one to turn left at to get to Agawak, but they found their way.
If you turn right, you'd be at Pine Acres.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, hormones are a strong,
very strong,
motivating factor.
In the North Woods as anywhere else, yes.
What kind of sports did you compete in, or did the camps compete in?
In my time, it's different today, but in my time, we competed in swimming, tennis, baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we competed with girls' camps in riflery and archery.
Mm.
Meets with
Agawak. What about sailing?
Sailing
today.
Yeah, they do a lot more today than we did. But those mm-hmm. were the three sports for the boys: tennis, swimming, and baseball.
Mm-hmm. Did Doc E ever have investors in the camp, or was this his venture?
Yes.
An adventure too.
Yes, yeah. It was his vocation. It was his life. His mm-hmm. that was his full-time occupation in Lewes too.
And that. But yet he continued working as a rabbi. I mean, so he had the best of both worlds
yes.
in a sense.
Yes.
He must have been a happy man. Was he happy?
Oh, he was. He was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
This is my favorite picture of them. Did you see that one? No. That one. That's when he retired. And that's mm-hmm. the mess hall that my grandmother was supervising.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought that was a wonderful picture. And that's him. He was always like that.
Mm-hmm. Always that that I don't even know what you call that beard.
Goatee.
I guess it is a goatee.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He always had a goatee, and once he shaved it, and the boys hated it, so he had to grow it back. And that's from the air.
Mm.
That's my mother and father.
Mm-hmm. And here are your grandparents'
mm-hmm.
picture of them at the house.
Right away, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrific.
In our lifetime, there have been 3 bideaways.
Oh, really?
This one burned down.
Mm-hmm.
When years later, after my father sold the camp, they built another one that was terrible, and the last owners built a beautiful one.
Mm-hmm. What did your father do after he sold the camp?
He worked for the American Camping Association in Chicago. He was very active as an officer in that.
Mm-hmm.
Devoted a lot of time to camping activities through that, promoting camping.
Mm-hmm.
And consulted, I think, with other camps, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, and Olin Sang, he was working, consulting with them.
Did he own any property up north off the camp, your dad did?
He sold it all.
Uh-huh. Did he have a house up there off camp? Or?
No, just Bideaway.
Okay, so he just would live there.
Doc E acquired a lot of property in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the tax situation became onerous as years went on, and Lou got rid of it all.
I see.
But when we had a car up there, we were encouraged to go to the Sinclair station because Doc E owned that property. And Sinclair rented the station.
He knows so much more.
That's great. Yeah, Doc E.
That was just a coincidence.
Just by chance. Just by chance.
Here's our little piece of the North Woods.
Mm, yes. Yeah, the pine scent.
I love that pine scent. I love those woods. It's still the same up there.
And every year you go up to the North Woods.
Yeah, but somebody's logging up. Yeah, we go to Minocqua, stop by there, see the camp, but then we go there 2 or 3 times a summer.
Mm-hmm.
But they're logging up those woods up there. That's what worries me.
I've been renting a house in near Manitouish Waters, which is about 15 miles north of there. And my two house guests were counselors with me at Cahuaga 47 years ago.
That's terrific.
Three of us still hang out together. One comes
in northern Wisconsin. Yeah.
Well, one comes from Virginia, Richmond, and the other one comes from Summit, New Jersey. But we've known each other all these years. It's a definite Cahuaga connection there that we maintain. So we'll be up there this summer. Come on up and visit. We'd love
That'll
to see
be
you.
Nice.
You're going to the other direction, sounds
yeah.
like.
Yeah, I'm
We'd
afraid
love to
so.
See you.
Yeah,
okay, what are you going to say? Cause
you've given
go
me a lot okay. to look at up there, too. Now I'm really sorry I'm leaving.
I am, too. Yeah. We'd love to show you around the area. That would have been nice.
That brochure,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, was an accordion fold, and it's longer than my printer bed, so I had to do this.
Oh, well, thank okay. you. Yeah.
And then I did the same thing on the back side, just so you get the agawam on both sides.
Thank you so much.
These are separate sheets.
Got it.
I do on back to back because I didn't know what would do the rest of them.
Okay, give Bob his, okay? Then
and it wouldn't print black and white for some reason.
You should give me your email address, too.
Hmm?
I don't have your email.